day of hearings on the legal consequences of the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories since 1967. The case was prompted by the UN General Assembly in December 2022, when the international organization passed a resolution requesting an advisory opinion from the ICJ on Israel's policies and practices in the West Bank and in East Al-Quds, with a focus on the legal consequences arising from depriving the Palestinians from self-determination. 52 nations and 3 organizations, namely the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the Arab League, and African Union, are taking part in the hearings.
Well, I think what we're witnessing today is a public trial. Country after country is exposing the evilness of occupation, is showing the tremendous violation of human rights that occupation continues to commit day in and day out, and it's also addressing the inhumane barbaric war that Israel continues to bring upon Gaza.
Iran and China were among those countries addressing the ICJ hearing on Thursday.
The UNGA resolution 3070 of 1973, I quote, reaffirms the legitimacy of the people's struggle for liberation from colonial and foreign domination and alien subjugation by all available means, including armed struggle.
As our Supreme Leader said, the calamity of Gaza is the calamity of humanity and international community as a whole. Therefore, each and every state and relevant international organization has its own legal and moral responsibility to act urgently and decisively to prevent the ongoing crimes of the Israeli regime in Gaza Strip.
Outside the court, braving the Hague's cold temperature, tens of people from across the Netherlands held a demonstration in solidarity with Palestinians.
I personally believe that the fact that it's not legally binding doesn't matter. I don't think this court case is necessarily going to be the direct reason that the Palestinian people will be liberated. I think it will be the pressure on our governments and international community that will hopefully make justice prevail.
Millions of people across the world are watching this case at the International Court of Justice. They are hoping that their faith in an international law-based system can be finally restored after decades of Israel subjecting the Palestinians to discrimination, apartheid, and deadly military force, and evading accountability. Max Civili, The Hague.
In response to the European Union's naval mission in the Red Sea, Yemen's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs Hossein Al-Azzi held a press conference addressing Yemen's stance on the tensions in the region. He urged EU members to withdraw their warships from the Red Sea, emphasizing that militarization of the region will only escalate the conflict.
Certainly, we will deal with any country who engages in hostilities against us, and we will deal with it as we dealt with the US and the UK. We are keen to treat everyone equally and will never allow the European Union or others to attack Yemen without getting a firm response. Whoever harms Yemen, we will harm him severely.
Al-Azzi noted that since the start of the Yemeni army's naval operations, over 5,000 vessels, including European ones, have safely passed through the Bab al-Mandab Strait after coordinating with Yemeni authorities. He also reaffirmed the safety of international maritime navigation for the entire world except for those who carry out hostile actions against Yemen.
The recent move by France targeting Yemeni drones is up for discussion. We have serious questions regarding the matter, and we expect Paris to provide us with reasonable explanation. If France does not apologize, and we are certain that Paris is following the British and American approach, we will respond because we have the right to self-defense. What is being practiced against American and British ships is due to their aggression against our country and their complicity in the ongoing genocide in Gaza.
Yemeni army has not targeted any European ships in its recent operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. However, the European Union has launched the naval mission Aspides to counter potential attacks on American, British, and Israeli-linked vessels.
Observers believe that the U.S. is dragging European countries into a direct war with the Yemeni army to protect its own interests in the region. They assert that an EU military intervention will impact the shipping of food and fuel to Europe, thereby destabilizing European countries. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sanaa.
Julian Assange's many and vocal supporters out in numbers again as the WikiLeaks founder's extradition hearing resumes. Locked up in the high-security Belmarsh jail on the edge of London since 2019, Assange didn't attend the hearing because of his poor health. In one sense, the argument has not changed. The U.S. claims he's guilty of spying and wants him to face a court in the States. His backers say his case is a threat both to the rule of law and to the very foundation of proper journalism.
It would have a devastating blow to journalism worldwide. If an Australian journalist that is publishing in Europe can be imprisoned in the United States, not a single journalist anywhere in the world is safe. This is the reason why all major press freedom organizations, human rights organizations, freedom of speech organizations in the world are rallying behind Julian, because they recognize the seriousness of the implication of this case if it goes ahead.
Over the years, Assange's case has attracted a lot of attention, most recently from his native Australia, a U.S. ally. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and his cabinet ministers were among those who backed a parliamentary motion introduced by independent Andrew Wilkie, calling for Assange to be returned home.
The Australian Parliament, at least, is muscling up a little and prepared to be a little bit more assertive with Washington, at least on the Assange issue, and that's a good thing. That's Australia growing up a little. And maybe it will have some influence in Washington and help to get a political resolution to this.
It's been long since WikiLeaks published evidence of American forces attacking journalists and other innocent people in Iraq, evidence that in another context would have been applauded as the uncovering of war crimes in the interest of the public.
The fundamental question here is, how can countries that lecture the world on all kinds of freedoms criminalize investigative journalism?
A final decision is yet to come, but if the judges decide in favor of the U.S., Assange's only remaining recourse to avoid extradition would be the European Court of Human Rights. Saeed Purza, London.
Shoppers at the popular Wuse market in Abuja, the Nigerian capital, are having tough times as skyrocketing rise in the prices of commodities has taken a heavy toll on ordinary people. Prices of commodities, especially food items, have gone up more than 100%, and indeed, they've continued to rise on a daily basis.
Cost of living is something else. It's terrible. A common man with a salary of 30,000 cannot buy a bag of rice of almost 80,000 naira.
There is hunger, terrible hunger, and high rise of stealing, thief, everything just keep going higher.
Bag of cement, it's like about 9,000, he just bought it. I said, wow, 9,000, where are we going? Bag of rice, 77,000.
Experts say, apart from the economic policy of devaluing the Nigerian currency, removal of multiple exchange rate windows has further weakened the naira against the dollar, resulting in inflation and harsh economic woes to the people. They said grinding poverty has created a sense of hopelessness in an already impoverished population, pushing many people to the edge.
IMF said we should devalue, we are devaluing. But what are the consequences of this on the economy, on the purchasing power parity that has even existed before now? We made money during the windfall when oil was at the price of oil was at its peak in the international oil market. But what did we do with this humongous amount that we made? It was frittered away through corruption.
Experts also say, at inception on 29 May 2023, the new government in Nigeria removed the subsidy on petrol, which pushed the prices of petrol up, resulting in the rise of goods and services, which further made things worse for the poor in Nigeria. But they said there are immediate solutions that can bring relief.
Nigeria is for Nigerians, so every Nigerian should benefit. So if the people want subsidy, they should reinstate that very particular subsidy. Or we fix our refineries. It's even dubious that today we are producing oil, but we subject the sales of our oil to American dollar, price them in dollar.
Pockets of protests over the economic hardship have started springing up in some Nigerian cities. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Labour Congress has called for a two-day nationwide strike on 27 and 28 February in protest over the rising cost of living.
The Nigerian government has promised to take proactive steps to mitigate the economic problems people are facing. Experts, however, say the government should first solve the persistent insecurity in Nigeria to be able to focus on agriculture for food security. They also say human capacity must be developed so that the Nigerian population becomes an asset instead of a liability. Tanjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
As the assault on Gaza escalates again with the death toll since October 7 nearing 30,000, pro-Palestinian protests are gaining momentum in Canada. During nationwide rallies, protesters criticized Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for his inaction.
Palestinian.
On the cusp of the Israeli invasion of the southernmost city of Gaza, Rafah, the people of take to the streets, joining cities across Canada, calling on their government to take measures to stop Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people.
I'm here to ask for ceasefire right now. Enough is enough. It has been taking a long time for our government to stand up and call for ceasefire. This is not the right way to do it. We have to get arms embargo.
I'm at a loss for words, to be honest, but what's going on, it's the end of the line. It's a death camp, and we want to, again, pressure our politicians, pressure our communities, hands off Rafah.
Although the government of Canada has called for a ceasefire, demonstrators noted that since October, Ottawa has approved $28.5 million of military exports to Israel. They see this, along with the refusal of the Canadian government to call the assault on Gaza genocide, tantamount to a stab in the back of the public's demands. Robert and Lakesh, Calgary.
Tens of thousands of farmers are standing their ground on the outskirts of New Delhi ahead of planned crucial talks. The Farmers' March comes 2 years after similar protests that lasted for a year against new agricultural reforms that were later scrapped by the government of Premier Modi. As general elections are due in the coming months, the farmers are mounting pressure on the government demanding legislation that would guarantee minimum support price for their produce.
We are protesting to guarantee prices for our crops. The previous government had schemes in support of farmers, but the present government is making laws which are against farmers and not acceptable to us. They want to sell India's agriculture sector to corporations, but we will protest till our demands are met.
The protesting farmers are mostly from the neighboring state of Punjab and Haryana. They say rising cultivation costs and debts have led them to increase their production of crops. Therefore, a guaranteed minimum support price for their produce would stabilize their income. They're also demanding the government fulfill its election pledge to double farmers' income and waive their loans and withdraw any legal case filed against them during earlier protest.
This government wants to destroy us. All the promises before elections turned futile. We want debt waivers, pensions for farmers and laborers, and the withdrawal of all legal cases filed against protesting farmers during the 2021 March. We are peacefully marching towards the capital, but the government is using tear gas to stop us as if we are outsiders. But we will fight till our demands are fulfilled.
Since the march started, several meetings between leaders of farmers and government ministers have ended inconclusively. The ministers of Modi's government, however, expect a peaceful solution. The two sides are expected to meet soon, as Prime Minister Modi has already said his government is working on more inclusive schemes to benefit farmers. His party also claims to have already doubled the minimum support price from 1,000 to 2,000 Indian rupees, a claim that farmers deny. The protests come at a time when the country is gearing up for general elections in few months' time. The farmers are seen as an important section of the voting population. Experts say Modi is expected to secure a third term, despite the protest. They say it is, however, crucial to strike a deal with the protesting farmers to secure a long-term solution, since successive governments have failed to appease them.
Most of the vital roads leading to the capital, New Delhi, have been fortified, like this one. And massive barricades have been erected across all sides of the border to make sure the protesters are confined to outside the city. Tens of thousands of farmers are camping just a few miles away from the capital. They say they will keep marching to the capital unless there is a breakthrough in negotiations. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Election in view of Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The 12th round of parliamentary election and the 6th round of the Assembly of Experts election will be held in Iran on March 1, 2024. The Iranian people will go to ballot boxes to elect the candidates of the Islamic Council Assembly, called Majlis, and the Assembly of Experts. This will once more manifest the unity of the followers of various faiths, religious sects and ethnicities in the vast Iranian land. The Islamic Council Assembly, Majlis, is one of the three branches of power according to the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is the main basis of legislature in the country, and the members of the Majlis are elected with the direct votes of people for a four-year term. The Assembly of Experts, however, is a unique body in Iran which has been shaped since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This organization has the duty of appointment of leader and supervision of the leader's performance. It can also dismiss the leader when needed. According to the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran, during the time of occultation of Imam Mahdi, the 12th infallible Imam from the Prophet's progeny, the country and the Islamic Ummah is led by a just and God-wary jurisprudent. He is aware of the circumstances of time, is brave, and a prudent administrator. Such a jurisprudent is elected by the Assembly of Experts, as they are specialized in finding the qualifications for the most important position in the country. The members of the Assembly of Experts are elected for an 8-year term. Among the most important reasons for election in the Islamic Republic of Iran, as a religious rule, are the emphasis of the Quran and the narrations from the Prophet and his 12 infallible successors, blessings of God upon them. God says in verse 11 of chapter Ra'd of the Noble Quran, "Indeed, Allah does not change a people's lot unless they change what is in their souls." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, also says, "No people consults except that is guided to the best way." In addition, Imam Ali, peace upon him, said that if there were not the big number of those who swear allegiance, he would abandon caliphate and rule of the Islamic Ummah. Moreover, Prophet has said elsewhere, "Whoever starts his day while he is indifferent towards the affairs of Muslims, he is not a Muslim." According to the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, and his successor, Ayatollah Khamenei, too, elections are very important. Imam Khomeini used to emphasize on the high status and role of elections and would persuade everybody to take part in all elections. The Imam would consider election as one of the honors of the Islamic Republic system. He said that election is a picture of freedom and independence of the country. He made it clear several times that no one, including the ulema and the elite, is entitled to impose their view on people, and it is people who have the right to shape their fate. In view of this, the Imam said, "We have no right. God the Exalted has not granted us the right. The Prophet of Islam has not given us the right to impose anything upon our nation." Elsewhere, Imam Khomeini said, "The authority should be in people's hand. This is a rational issue. Every wise person accepts this issue, that the ordainments of everyone should be in his own hand." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei also puts high emphasis on elections. He said, "The prime importance of election is because election is the trench of country. People's presence at ballot boxes immunizes the fate of nation and people and prevents the enemy from invasion, aggression, and further impudence." The leader said nearly 20 years ago, "Our country relies on people's votes. The reason why the enemies of the nation and those who look avariciously at this land have failed to deal any harm to it is the presence, will, and participation of people in different scenes." In view of the leader, elections are among the faithful and sensitive arenas of the country. He calls elections as the night of Qadr of the Islamic system, since it determines the affairs of the country for 4 years. He says, "The republicanism and Islamism of the system both depend on election because materialization of republicanism and Islamism and the rule of people in the administration of the country has no way but holding of election." Ayatollah Khamenei says elsewhere, "Election is injection of fresh blood into the body of the Islamic Republic system. It is the renewal of power and force for the nation. Election means this. It means injecting a new spirit, a new blood, and a new breath into the country, into the nation, and into the people. This is election." Ayatollah Khamenei clarifies election as follows. "It is both a right and an obligation for people to come and determine the fate of their country carefully, as the country belongs to the people. People should come and, through correct and free election, determine the lawmakers in the legislature, determine their directors as it has been assigned in the law. This is the people's right and it belongs to them, but it is an obligation too. It is not that one says, 'I don't want to apply my right.' No, the fate of the system depends on application and wielding of this right. This is an obligation. Everyone should participate. Election is both the right of nation and a national duty. The Islamic Republic system has annulled the systems which appoint power, and it granted the people's election a role in the administration of the country. This is the right of each person in the country to be able to elect and play a role in determining the manager of the country. Furthermore, it is a duty too, because this participation can keep alive the spirit of vividness and sense of responsibility in the society forever, and it can manifest people's presence boastfully in the face of the enemies of this nation. Election is not a mere duty. It is not a mere right either. It is both your right and a public duty." Ayatollah Khamenei says on the status of election, election per se is the symbol of national might. If the dear Iranian nation manages to bring its ample votes to the scene in this election, and the people's presence is spectacular, this will be the greatest symbol of might and national dignity. The leader maintains that broad participation in election will ensure the country, as he says, people's presence in election will ensure the country de facto. Election is the real indicator of people's presence in the country's political scene. Every election which is held fervently will ensure the country. In his recent remarks to the visiting people of East Azerbaijan province, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Everyone should participate in the election. Election is the main basis of the Islamic Republic system. Election is the course of the country's reform. Those who intend to solve problems and to repair, they should come to election. The accurate way is to elect."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Israeli regime continues its onslaught on the Gaza Strip, intensifying its attacks on all fronts. The Palestinian death toll has reached almost 30,000, with the majority of them being women and children. This as hospitals, refugee camps, and residential buildings remain the main targets of the occupation forces in the blockaded sliver. Meanwhile, deliberations at the International Court of Justice are highlighting the illegality of Israel's occupation and its apartheid practices on Palestinian, on occupied Palestinian land. In this edition of The Spotlight, we'll discuss how and why this aggression can continue on an entire population before our very eyes. Joining us on this edition of The Spotlight, we have co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mr. Mick Napier, joining us from Edinburgh. And Ms. Sarah Flounders joining us from New York, from the International Action Center.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
welcome to the program. To the both of you, let's start off with Mr. Napier in Edinburgh. It's day 140, Mr. Napier. Israel's attacks from air, land, and sea continue on the southern city of Rafah. Now, that's where around 1.5 million Palestinians have taken shelter, with a full ground offensive looming. Also in the south, Israeli troops have once again stormed the Nasser medical complex, preventing the entry or exit of medical personnel and civilians. So the north of Gaza has been demolished. The death toll is close to 30,000, mostly women and children. How far will this clear intent to destroy Gaza continue?
It's impossible to tell. It looks very much as if the Israelis intend to bring this to a completion and to reduce Palestine to an area without, sorry, to reduce Gaza to an area without Palestinians, maybe driving them into Egypt, which seems to be getting ready to receive them. But they come up against the problem that they are now becoming a serious embarrassment to their paymasters and to their supporters in the West, because Israel is making their supporters pay a price. The barbarity, everyone has a particular story which they will carry to the grave, but for me it's the doctors who had to amputate their own children's limbs without anaesthetics, and then to read that the Israelis had allowed a few trucks into Gaza but had removed the anaesthetics from those trucks before allowing them to proceed. So what we're seeing is utter barbarity, drilled into our consciousness, so that people know in a way that they didn't even know about the Vietnam War or the devastation of Iraq, because the images are so powerful, are so constant, that people are just horrified. So resistance is beginning. We see social movements beginning to move in America and Britain. My own city, Cowes City in Scotland, the major parties have just passed a motion denouncing the genocide, but also because of the case at the ICJ, or the ruling by the ICJ, that there was a plausible case for genocide against Israel, the great majority of the councillors have said that our council, must make sure that they don't be in any way complicit with the genocide, even inadvertently, which has implications for investments in pension funds, various other trade arrangements with Israel. So it's beginning to filter through into movements. I mean, arms companies are being blockaded. There was an incident in the Scottish Parliament a couple of days ago where arms companies could not get into the Parliament because of a blockade. So I think this price that the British and American in Brussels, British and American governments and the EU are paying for their support for Israel is beginning to work its way through into a profound crisis in the political system. We saw this in London in the Parliament yesterday or the day before, where they voted on Gaza. And because the opposition Labour Party, which is led by a complete Zionist and a very, very militant Zionist, felt the need for protection from the population, from a major section of the population that's furious at his support for Israel, they had to resort to chicanery in the Parliament, which is itself becoming a bit of a crisis. But ultimately, it comes down to the situation in Gaza, the horror, the savagery of what Israel is doing, the fact that Palestinians are still resisting and are undefeated, and also that, of course, in Yemen, we see the Yemenis enforcing international law, or trying to enforce international law and the Convention Against Genocide, and being bombed by America and Britain for their trouble. So this crisis has a long way to go, but the question is, how much of a price are Washington and London prepared to pay before they take very dramatic efforts to rein in Israel? Britain has already talked about cutting arms sales. I think it's the beginning of the fear that popular resistance could become stronger and stronger.
Right. Ms. Flounders, the top UN court, the ICJ, it's holding the fifth day, or basically it summed up the fifth day of public hearings on Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestinian territories. Almost all participating countries, that was over 50 countries, and a number of rights organizations, they were in agreement on issues like the illegality of the occupation, the illegality of the settlements, the apartheid practices of the Israeli regime, the genocide taking place in Gaza, and also they were in total agreement that Israel must be held accountable for its crimes and violations. I want to get your thoughts
on the statements that were read out today at the ICJ? And do you think this is the most isolated Israel has been in recent memory?
Well, what's most important about the ICJ hearings, which have no power in and of themselves, is it is enforcing an isolation that Israel will not recover from. The statements from country after country, 52 countries, the Arab League, the African Union, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, many others, are all scheduled to speak. And one after the other, these statements, based on international law, their condemnation of Israel and also of the U.S. and Britain for their embrace, their support, their weaponizing of this genocide. It is changing the consciousness. All these statements on international law have long been on the records and long been ignored. And Israel wants to continue to ignore them. But they cannot ignore what is happening on the ground. There is a sea change in consciousness, and that's a global fact. Here in the U.S., where support for Israel in a large way was a given, totally in control by the corporate media here, that is changing. And overwhelmingly, in every recent poll, particularly among young people, but now in the whole population, there is a solidarity or an identification with Palestine and its goals, or a call for a ceasefire. That is a change that Israel won't recover from. Their continuing isolation, horror, and the resolutions being passed to disinvest, to block, to stop, whether it's weapons, economic aid, the actions, and I'm talking about everything from sit-ins and shutdowns to port closings, are important. And especially, I do think it's always important to salute the action that Yemen has taken, completely legal in international law, and has not led to not one death or casualty. Actually, even when ships were sunk, as they were, a British ship, it was Yemeni Navy that evacuated the entire staff. Right. What's the U.S. and the British response? It's to bomb Yemen, also to creating hundreds and hundreds of deaths and injuries. So they are 100% behind Israel. They are pushing to widen the war. The bombing of certainly of Iraq and Syria confirmed this. It's a very dangerous moment, but the world, the whole world movement, is so totally with Palestine that consciousness becomes a material force in history. And I think this is a moment where every force in the world has to find every possible weapon, every mobilization that they can to show solidarity with Palestine and to, on every level, denounce this criminal activity by Israel, but also by the U.S. and Britain.
Mick Napier, the U.S., as we know, vetoed a third U.N. Security Council resolution on a Gaza ceasefire. That move, it sparked widespread criticism, not only on the U.S., but the Security Council itself, prompting many commentators to call for a total reform of this 15-member U.N. body. Do you also see this as a major flaw in the world body's functionality?
Of course. If you give America and even Britain a veto power over protecting people from genocide, then clearly the system is simply not fit for purpose. And it's not as if this started, of course, on October the 7th or even 5 years ago. This has been the longest running genocide for a very long time. It's been going on effectively since 1948. And, you know, some people who deny the genocide really don't understand what genocide is about. Genocide, like Jews in Europe or against people in Rwanda, doesn't mean the extermination of every last member of that group. Genocide means deliberately setting out to kill and to damage the group in whole or in part, as the law says. And what's happening in Gaza clearly amounts to genocide. Every denial by the USA and the UK and its allies simply makes them more and more isolated worldwide. It's not lost on people that watching the news from Ukraine, there was a terrible tragedy. A rocket struck a market. 17 people were killed. And Zelensky rushed to say this was the most barbaric act imaginable. And it was seen to be the worst attack in Europe for many, many months. This is a morning's work in Gaza, or not even a morning's work. And if you deny that that what's happening in Gaza is genocide, you simply reduce your own credibility. And when the West talks, lectures people in Africa, Asia and elsewhere about the so-called rules-based international order, they're now telling people the rules now include genocide when it suits NATO and genocide when it suits these powers. So if the rules include genocide, it means we're in a jungle. It means that that there isn't even the pretense of international law. So yes, the Palestinians for the last 50 years have been winning a major battle. They have won the battle for world public opinion very decisively. And if you measure that public opinion, there's a whole number of different ways it's done, including by the EU and by governments. We find that Israel has been a pariah state for a very long time. UN reports have found that Israel, quote unquote, kills children indiscriminately. The last UNHCR report during the Great March of Return, I think, or in 2021, said Israel is killing medical workers, journalists and children, knowing they are medical workers, knowing they are journalists and knowing that they are children. So this has been out for a very, very long time. It isn't as if our intelligence agencies don't know, but they have continued to supply weapons. They've continued to supply smart bombs made in America or made in Britain or made in Belgium in order to carry out the genocide in Gaza. This is now widely known. And every time that America or Britain or the EU start to lecture the world about a rules-based international order, never mind democracy and human rights, I think they're going to be met with a laugh or with a cruel smile and told this doesn't wash anymore. So I think, yes, the collective West is going to suffer massively because of this, because the longer they stick to Israel, the more Israel will drag them down. And we can see this at the UN and elsewhere, that it's the West which is isolated. And inside the West, it's governments which are isolated from their own populations who are increasingly beginning to take action. So the latest US veto on the UN Security Council did make many, many millions of people, probably hundreds of millions of people around the world, shake their heads and say, this is savage. This is American bombs being sent to carry out the genocide. And I think right. The collective West is paying a very high price for their attachment to the Israeli genocide.
Ms. Flounders, about the ongoing ceasefire talks in Cairo, many experts have described U.S.'s involvement in the talks as nothing but a facade, because if Washington was seeking a ceasefire, then it wouldn't veto multiple Security Council attempts to stop the bloodshed and death of innocent women and children, now would it?
Well, as the U.S. statement at the U.N. Security Council showed, the U.S. is there to take the exact position of Israel, not to move forward on any negotiations. They again simply called for the release of the hostages and a short pause in the bombing. That's not a negotiating position at all. Now, what's the impact of this world outrage on Israel? And it will get worse and worse. Israel's ports are blockaded. Ships are no longer willing to dock there or come through the Suez Canal to Israel. Its industries are increasingly shut down, and its population in the hundreds of thousands is leaving. This is a war that is so criminal, it can't be defended. And the U.S. continues to do that. Their only role in the negotiations is to attempt to sabotage the negotiations and to pressure the surrounding Arab states to make concessions, trying to force them to back solidarity with Palestine. And it's actually doing the opposite. The U.S. position is totally unreasonable. So totally supportive of Israel and this genocide that's taking place, that it's like the mask is being ripped off. And that doesn't quickly come back in people's eyes, in countries throughout the entire region. They are looking for other alternatives. They no longer look to the U.S. And that also has long-term implications, not only for Israel, but also for the U.S. and Britain. They are no longer looked to as providing for people's needs in any way whatsoever. New trade arrangements are being made, and many other things are happening that are changing the international order. And this is accelerating that very process.
Meek Napier, why aren't regional blocs or even Arab governments stepping up and taking matters into their own hands? Yesterday, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he called on Muslim countries to openly express their opposition to Israel and sever ties with the Israeli regime. Why is that not happening?
When the Zionists conquered Palestine, the Jordanian king took a bite as well out of Palestine. Collusion between Arab regimes and Tel Aviv via Washington has been growing for decades and decades. The Saudi Crown Prince spoke a couple of years ago at a conference in New York, which was attended mainly by Zionists, and they came away shocked, actually, surprised at the vehemence of the Saudi Crown Prince's attacks on the Palestinians, mouthing Zionist mantras that the Palestinians are responsible for their own problems and so on. So this collusion goes, you know, has very deep roots. And I think that, one, it's fear. Do they want to rely on Washington to protect them from their own populations? Many of them are very archaic regimes, kleptocracies, run by kings and emirs and so on. There's very little popular support. They rely on the USA as to protect them, and, you know, if push comes to shove. And the only way America will build a deep alliance with any of these regimes is by forcing them to recognize Israel, which is currently a projection of American power into the region. So in order to stay sweet with America, you have to embrace Israel to one degree or another, and that's what's been happening. Now, of course, that brings them into collision with their own populations, who can see on TV this regime killing Arabs and Muslims because they are Arabs and Muslims. It's a racist monstrosity. So that creates an incredible tension in Cairo or Amman or the Gulf or North Africa. Now, how soon can that pressure make itself felt? How soon can these dictatorships be challenged successfully is something that we don't know until it happens. But, you know, there are 7 million Jews in Israel, probably 6 million Zionist Jews, and are surrounded by 250, 270 million, 300 million people who know what they're doing and are bitterly hostile to that state and wish to see it disappear. So in order to survive, I have no sympathy for Israel, of course, but if that tiny number of people are to maintain themselves through terror in the region, and they can't do it through love and admiration and building relationships, it can only be through terror, that terror has to be extreme. And given that they got such a terrible shock by the Palestinian resistance on October the 7th, the ferocity of the response is kind of scientific. It's Israel seeing it only has one way to restore its deterrent edge against the Palestinians by mass killings, but also against the whole people of the region, because the appetite of Israel for Palestine could even one day go beyond Palestine. And already elements in the Israeli government, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, are talking about possibly overthrowing the government in Amman, and expressing an appetite for, again, right, for parts of Lebanon, parts of Egypt.
Sir Founders, over 4.5 months of lethal and deadly attacks, the resistance groups in the Gaza Strip, the Palestinian resistance groups, they're fighting back strong both inside and outside of Gaza. Resistance leaders say that despite the Western aid for Israel, the regime has failed to achieve its stated goals in Gaza and will continue to do so. How does this, first of all, what have the Israelis achieved, in your opinion, and how does this reflect on the Israeli regime?
Well, in terms of what the Israeli regime has achieved, they have achieved global isolation and outraged, and the isolation of their own regime. The apartheid nature couldn't be clearer. They have achieved militarily not one thing that they started out to achieve. They said that they were going to completely destroy and disband the resistance, the government of Hamas, the administration. They haven't achieved that at all. And even in areas that they declared were safe 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago almost, northern Gaza, the resistance continues there, although the toll is enormous. 600,000 people have not received food or medicine, water, anything, and the whole area has been totally destroyed. And yet, the resistance does very much, there's not one area that's safe. Every single day, there are ambushes. And Israel also, and this has been so clear in videos now that are produced by the resistance movement, every bomb that falls, 15% of them, don't detonate. They are picked up by the Palestinian movement and repurposed into the missiles and the weapons that they fire back. So the more Israel bombs, the more the resistance will find ways to resist from the very weapons that fall on them. Now, that is an incredible statement because it shows that the political consciousness, the organization, the determination to resist is stronger than the weapons, and that they will find new ways of making those weapons. They take down drones one after the other and manage to create new forms. It's very interesting because it does show that weapons, money, equipment alone is not decisive. What's decisive is there is a unified resistance of every Palestinian current today, secular and religious, within Gaza and also in the West Bank. That's important. You can see in areas that had not been before, the response to these gangs of settler thugs that kidnap and grab hostages left and right from the Palestinians, and yet they now are facing really organized resistance in city after city. So I don't see this war going in any way the way in which Israel declared. Netanyahu announced in 140 days they have achieved nothing but further isolation and horror. They are determined to go forward. That is really the terrible part. This on Rafah, where they ordered people to flee,